It's Sunday, the 28th of May, 2016. RIP Bryce Dejean Jones. Basketball Monster Show brought to you by Loot Crate and D Rose is Pro. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like D Rose is Pro and leave a review for the show, you can be a sponsor of an episode. That's just the way it goes here at the Red Rock Basketball Monster Show. So thank you to D Rose is Pro for leaving that review and sponsoring today's podcast. If you are watching this show live on YouTube, which you can do with each of the shows that we broadcast, and you want to interact with the show, all you need to do is tweet at me at redrock_bball. You can tweet at me at that address at any time, but of course during the show we can interact live as we go ahead. And today's show, we're going to be covering the Orlando Magic, doing the season in review show for the Magic, which I had an extraordinary amount of questions on, the most questions I've had for any team, to be honest. So we'll get to those at the end of the show, but for now,
let's get to it.
We're talking Orlando Magic, who had a stunning development in their offseason with Scott Skiles resigning as coach. Now, as you probably know, I've been one of the biggest Scott Skiles critics throughout his tenure in Milwaukee and now in Orlando. And to say that he resigned was a pleasant surprise to me is an understatement. It seemingly came out of nowhere. There was a lot of odd decisions that were made for the Magic in terms of initially hiring him. That seemed like a weird decision. Some of the personnel decisions they made, trading Tobias Harris to placate some of Skiles's needs and wants in terms of veterans on expiring free agent deals, that was a bizarre decision. His rotational moves were dumb. His communication skills are terrible. His ability to develop young players are non-existent. And I'm glad that he's gone, and he hopefully will now not get another NBA head coaching job. Don't want to deny the man money, but he's made plenty of money in his career. But he should not be in charge of an NBA team. He shouldn't, especially not one that's trying to rebuild and develop players. It's just not who he is. And honestly, for his career, he just has shown to be a below average coach, and I'm glad that he's not coaching this team anymore. Fortuitously, Frank Vogel was let go by the Indiana Pacers, and the Magic snapped him up. As good a situation as the Magic could have hoped for, and honestly, out of the remaining coaching jobs, the best situation that Vogel could have hoped for. The Magic finished last season 35-47. They started off pretty well. November and December, they were decent. They were absolutely dreadful through the remainder of the season, and a lot of that goes on Skiles and the way that he grates on players. Normally it takes two or three seasons. It took about 2 months this time, with players getting upset, rotational decisions being ridiculous, and play completely falling off. The Magic do own three draft picks in this upcoming draft. They have pick 11, they have pick 41, and they have pick 47 in the draft. So they're not great assets. Pick 11's okay, but it's nothing spectacular. But they've got a lot of young assets on their team at the moment, and we're going to get into that in just a sec. Before we do, though, a quick word from our sponsor for today, which is Loot Crate. And as you're well aware, Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month, and you get 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. You head to lootcrate.com/redrock, and that is our unique URL, just to check out all the things they've got on offer over at Loot Crate. Doesn't cost you anything to go to that address. Helps the podcast, and you might find yourself exposed to a great new product that these guys have got on offer. If you do like what you see and you decide you want to sign up to a new monthly subscription, any new monthly subscription that uses lootcrate.com/redrock and then enters the coupon code REDROCK, you save $3 off that new subscription. So it's a pretty good deal, and it was already a good deal because the stuff that they send you each month, we're talking in excess of $40 value that costs you only $20. So check out lootcrate.com/redrock, use the coupon code REDROCK, save money and enjoy their products starting right now. Before I get into the rest of the Magic, just I mentioned it at the start of the show. Terrible news regarding Bryce Dejean Jones, and he's dead, basically shot to death, breaking into the incorrect apartment. Some of the details are still a little fuzzy at this point, but it appears he was trying to, for some reason, break into his child's mother's apartment. We're hearing reports that it was his girlfriend, and she'd locked him out of the house. And he went to the wrong house, broke in, and then got shot through the bedroom door in the stomach and bled to death. Terrible news for Bryce. Terrible news just in general for anybody to die, really. The Pelicans organization, the NBA community, Bryce's family. everything, just a horrible, horrible situation. And all of my thoughts go out to Bryce and his family, and of course, I'm sure all of your thoughts go out there as well. Just no matter what happened, no matter whether he was in the wrong, and yes, he broke into a house, he shouldn't have been there, you don't deserve to die over that sort of stuff. And it's just, it's always a tragedy when that sort of thing happens. Let's talk Orlando Magic now onto a, I was going to say onto a less somber note, but the way that the Magic played last season wasn't all that inspiring as it is. But there's more scope for them to get better. Definitely, they've got a lot of upside on this team. We look at their impending free agents. There's Brandon Jennings, who's an unrestricted free agent. There's Jason Smith, who's an unrestricted free agent. There's Dwayne Dedman, who's an unrestricted free agent. You've got Andrew Nicholson and Evan Fournier, who are restricted free agents. And then Ersan Ilyasova has an $8.4 million non-guaranteed deal, which there is almost zero chance that he gets that guaranteed, I would say. And Devin Marble has a $1 million non-guaranteed deal as well. I would be stunned if Brandon Jennings returns. That appears to be some of the friction that was behind the Skiles' resignation, so I don't think they're going to be bringing him back. He's going to be looking for a bigger payday and a more secure role, Jennings is. Jason Smith was solid for what he is, a backup big man. He's 30 years old. He might come back. He was solid, but whether he comes back in at that same cost or anything like that, it remains to be seen. And Dwayne Dedman, he shows a bit of potential, but he's 26 and hasn't really had a chance to break up. But I think that if they could get him on a cheap deal, they'd be keen to bring him back. Fournier is the biggest name here on this team as a restricted free agent. He seems likely to get a deal in excess of $15 million, would be my guess, for Evan Fournier, which might seem high to some people, but I've been massively high on Fournier ever since he entered the draft, and finally he was given an opportunity and shown how he could break out. We'll talk about him a little bit later and that position on the wing, which could be definitely in a spot for some flux with the new coaching regime brought in. And Andrew Nicholson, I just don't buy Andrew Nicholson. Scott Skiles seemed to love him at times, seemed to hate him at other times. He's shown flashes for about two or three games at a time throughout his career, then he falls off and is non-existent for 30 games. And yeah, you extend a qualifying offer to him, but at 26 years old, I'm not really sure he ever becomes a starter caliber player or even like a third or fourth big off the bench. I'm not really sure that that's the sort of value that he brings at any stage. Let's talk about these players now. The first one we're going to talk about is Nick Vucevic, who just always remains as a steady option. He was 27th in 9-cat leagues this year. He was 30th in 8-cat leagues. He, as per all the players on this team, had to undergo some form of Skilesing. He was benched for chunks of time. He played 3 minutes less per game this year than he did last year, and that caused him to drop maybe six or seven spots in the rankings, but still, 18-9 he averaged, 3 assists, 1.1 blocks, 0.8 steals, and 51-75 is his percentages. These are, you know, pretty decent numbers. Obviously, his defense is a concern at times. He's not the best defender, but he was, you know, a pretty important player on this team. He finished third on the team in win shares. He was second or equal first on the team in his box score plus minus. He had a defensive box score plus minus, which is actually third on the team, and maybe some of that goes to, some of that credit goes to Skiles for improving him defensively. He was quite good, though, in that sort of metric. Led the team in PER. Overall, he's just a really key player to me. And I think some of his defensive failings, I think it gets overblown a little bit. A lot of people are talking about Vucevic being a player who you shouldn't be starting as a center, who's not good enough to start as a center because of his defensive failings. And maybe that's true on a really upper echelon top four team. But to me, he's 25 years old. He has shown enough improvement in that area over the course of his career to make me think that he will continue to still improve to a degree. He's never going to be an outstanding defender, but I think that he continues to go along his merry rate. Now Frank Vogel has got a reputation as a defensive guy, rightfully so. He was played, you know, some great defense in his teams in Indiana, sometimes with good personnel, sometimes without good personnel. So it's fair to say it could go one of two ways, that he motivates Vucevic to become a better defensive player, or he gets frustrated with Vucevic and doesn't play him. Now, I think the latter is unlikely, because it's not something we've really seen from Vogel before, getting a player who, okay, you're not defending like the best defensive player in the league, therefore you're not playing. And who are his other options? Will they re-sign Dwayne Dedman and start him? Unlikely. Will they draft a rookie at pick 11, big man? Yeah, absolutely, they could do that. You know, guys like Deontay Davis, Domantas Sabonis, all these sort of guys are available at pick 11. They might go with one of those guys, but Vogel's not going to come out and go, all right, Vucevic, you're been, you know, probably the best player on this team over the last 3 years. You're a big key to what we do offensively. You can shoot, you can do some things down low. We're going to put an untested, untried, undeveloped rookie in as the starting center or some scrap heap free agent. I just don't think that's going to be the case. So I think Vucevic has value pretty much locked up for the next at least two seasons. Maybe when he heads into the sort of late 20s, 29 zone that they start to fade away from him and they actively look for replacements. But I don't see that being a concern heading into next season. I said that the numbers that he dropped off, 3 minutes a game less under Skiles because of the Skiles just general ridicularity that he was putting forward. I imagine that he gets back up to 32, 33 minutes and starts to be a challenge for the top two rounds. I wouldn't take him in the top two rounds most likely. Yes, he's an elite percentage guy for a big man. He scores well, he rebounds well, the blocks are coming up, he's got his assists up to almost three a game. These are big improvements, but there is that slight concern that how he meshes under Vogel, the reduced pace that they play under Vogel. The Magic were a top half team in pace last year. The Pacers, not so much, and they've never been a top pace team in the NBA under Vogel. So maybe that decrease in pace limits what he can do. It could also benefit him and allow him to be more efficient and the team to be more deliberate in forcing the ball into him as one of their premier offensive players. Vic Oladipo. I was massive on Oladipo coming into last season. I was calling him as an all-star, calling him as a top 20 player. And then Skiles happened, and he absolutely killed my prediction. Victor Oladipo finished the season as the 33rd ranked player in 8-cat leagues, the 34th in 9-cat leagues. But we need to look closer, because he started off the season as the starter, and then Skiles went, nah, you know what? We're going to bench you. We're going to play you as the sixth man, and that's fine if you're playing him still the most amount of minutes when he's clearly the most talented backcourt wing player on this team, clearly. But he wouldn't. He'd play him 27 minutes a night, 28 minutes a night. He'd lose his groove completely when he was playing off the bench, and it made absolutely no sense to make that move, or make the move that that Skiles made to put Oladipo on the bench. Post All-Star break, when Skiles realized the folly of his ways and put Oladipo back into the starting lineup and started running him heavy minutes, and really heavy minutes, which he probably won't get under Vogel, but Vogel has had a reputation of, okay, these are my best guys, they are playing the most minutes, we are playing our best five together for big chunks of minutes, and that could mean big things for Oladipo. Post All-Star break, he was the 9th ranked player in 9-cat leagues. He was the 13th ranked player in 8-cat leagues. Obviously, these are tremendous numbers, tremendously good numbers. Is he a second-round player next year? I will double down and say, yes, he will be a second-round player next year. I will also double down and say, you probably don't need to pick him in the second round, but if you're picking between 20 and 24, I think it's a fairly solid bet to grab him. His numbers were impressive for the season. They weren't awesome, but, well, they were awesome down the stretch, but they weren't awesome for the year. 16, 5, and 4, 1.5 threes, 1.5 steals, 0.8 blocks, 44 and 83. Great. Over his last 20 games, he blocked 1.3 shots. He averaged 20 points, 4.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 2.2 steals, and 1.3 threes. That is why he was a top 10 player. He was shooting 50% from the field, which is probably unrealistic for him, but I think he can be a 45 to 46% shooter. He was shooting 85% from the line, and he was shooting 39% from three. I don't think that's a complete misrepresentation of who he is. He was absolutely flying down the stretch until a concussion ended his season, and he is someone who I am massive on next season to take a jump. He's not a breakout player because he was already a third round player as it is, but to me, he has the opportunity to jump inside the top 15. That is not a crazy recommendation, I wouldn't have thought, and I am absolutely in love with Oladipo from a fantasy point of view. He is a 25 and 5 guy with a 1.5 threes, 2 steals upside on really good percentages, and he could also block a shot a game. He is that good defensively in terms of shot blocking also. When we look at his advanced numbers, they weren't awesome. He finished 4th on the team in win shares. His box score, plus minus, he was first on the team, equal with Vucevic and Aaron Gordon. He was the team's leader in VORP, and he had an above average PER. Had a nice true shooting of 53%. Didn't turn the ball over massive amounts. Definitely not the highest turnover player on the team. I thought he was really good. He was the best player in terms of being able to acquire steals, with the exception of Devin Marble, who only played 250 minutes. Oladipo was good on offense, he was good on defense, he showed improvements on both ends of the court, and I think that him heading into his fourth season is primed for an absolute monster season. He'll be 24 years old and he is set to take off and really start to put up the numbers and really start to be a guy who challenges to be a 20-point scorer, 5 and 5, 2 steals, 1.5 threes. That is the sort of upside I have at Victor Oladipo, and I can't wait to see it either come to fruition or me look like a dickhead. Evan Fournier. You're well aware of my Evan Fournier affiliation, my affection. I've been on, I think Fournier was probably the first one of my boys in the NBA. And if you've listened to this podcast since its inception, you would have heard me speak about Fournier way more times than was necessary. Finally, he got an opportunity and he played huge, huge minutes under Scott Skiles. And probably some of it, to be honest, wasn't deserved. But he produced and he was tremendous. He finished the season ranked 68th in 9-cat leagues, 74th in 8-cat leagues. Pretty similar post and pre all-star splits, which is a great sign of consistency. But the thing you have to worry about is no coach has ever really shown faith in Fournier before Skiles and never really given him the opportunity. He finished equal team leading minutes, playing 33 a game. He averaged 15.5 points, 2 threes, 3 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.2 steals on 46 and 84. So numbers that aren't all that far off from what Oladipo was able to do. He also doesn't block any shots whatsoever, but he shot 40% from three. He doesn't turn the ball over. He is a guy that can play the two, he can play the three. He can also be used as a secondary ball handler. And they've got so many ball handlers on this team. Aside from Oladipo, there's Alfred Payton, obviously, and Fournier, who plays a three. And then you've got Mario Hezonja, who's a three as well, but he can also be a point guard. So there's lots of players who can handle the ball on this team. But Fournier turned in really a tremendous season. Aside from the minutes bump that he got, he saw increases in his per 36 numbers in threes, in points, in assists, in steals, and improved both of his percentages as well, especially his free throws going from 73 to 84%, and he took his threes up from 38 to 40. Now, the 40 is a high number, but he has shot 38% from three. Actually, his last three seasons prior to this one, he shot 41, 38, and 38, so he's always been a really good three-point shooter. Added some other parts to his game, improved his defense, and it paid off for him because he's going to get a pretty decent contract heading into restricted free agency. And he was the league leader, or he was the team leader for this team in win shares. He had 5.7 there. Box score plus minus, he finished fourth. Overall, he just had, comfortably, his best season of his career. Now, what do they do with him, considering they drafted Hezonja with pick 5? Do they bring him back? There is absolutely no doubt that they sign him, and I think that they match, unless it's a contract that goes for $20 million a season. Maybe they don't, but who else are they signing? That's the other part. They could be, and we've heard rumors of this, they could be players for Al Horford. They could be players for Chandler Parsons. And if that's the case, then matching a big deal on Fournier when you've got Hezonja there as well, and if you're bringing in Chandler Parsons, maybe that's not the best use of your assets. But still, I would be looking to match if possible, making a trade later on if necessary, because even if you strike out on those free agents, Fournier has shown that at 24 years old, he's still got a bit of room to grow, and he was able to be a player who could shoot on this team. And when you got Oladipo and Gordon and Payton and Vucevic, you can't hit threes. You need someone who can hit threes out there, and that's exactly the sort of role that Fournier provided, as I mentioned, as a secondary ball handler as well. A really big season from him. Maybe he doesn't become that top 75 player like he was this year. Maybe this is a high watermark for him, but I think that he's going to be a top 100 player, almost no doubt, next season, and I think he can maintain that value for the next 2 to 3 seasons. There is a lot of uncertainty with him, though, but I think that the way he played opened up eyes around the league, and he's going to demand a big salary, and that's going to allow him to play 30 minutes a night wherever he goes and be able to put up numbers that should be owned in basically all leagues. Next, we get into Alfred Payton, who was a disappointment. Some of it definitely of his own doing, some of it of Skiles' doing, who didn't like him whatsoever as a point guard, and probably the main reason why Skiles is no longer coaching in Orlando, because of the distrust that Skiles had for management and the management's opinion on Alfred Payton being the starting point guard. Skiles wanted to run CJ Watson, he wanted to run Brandon Jennings there, and management were like, Scotty, it's not happening, mate. We're giving this to Lord Alfred, who finished his rookie season on a tremendous run. I think he had back-to-back triple-doubles in March in his rookie season, but this year just struggled to get anything going. Finished 9-cat leagues, 194th, 122nd in 8-cat leagues. Didn't show much improvement post-All-Star break, and he's still a guy, he looks like he's going to be a guy for a while, that's going to have concerns in terms of his overall value because of his poor free throw shooting. He shot 49% from the free throw line this year, did bump his field goal percentage up to 44, and he's a guy that can't shoot but could easily be a 46% shooter because of his ability to finish at the rim. But he averaged 10.7 points, half a three, 3.6 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 1.2 steals, and shot 33% from three. He's got a lot of room to improve. He is a guy that I think is going to, instead of playing the 29.5 minutes a game, he is going to be up there around 32, 33, and he should see a bounce back. But he's not going to be a must-own player in every situation, because when you're shooting so poorly from the field, it does keep your value right down. And when you're only scoring 10 points a game and you're not contributing in threes and your rebounds aren't high enough and your steals take a dramatic drop, it hurts as well. I think that he can be a real underrated guy, but he's got to be more of a head-to-head player than a roto guy, because that free throw is going to be a concern. The lack of points, a lack of threes, all that sort of stuff will be a concern. But I reckon you're going to be able to get him around pick 100 in drafts, and I think that could end up being good value as a guy who maybe approaches top 60, which is probably his ceiling. When you've got so many other deficiencies, it's hard for you to crack inside the top 30. I don't think he'll ever be that guy in his career, but I think that he can be that player who's just a constant hovering between 60 and 40 if he gets things going. And I do have a fair amount of confidence in him heading into next season, which a lot of people won't. So I think that you'll be able to get some pretty decent value for him. Aaron Gordon. He, again, this is might as well just be the statement for everyone here apart from Fournier. He was mistreated by Skiles. He was given basically no playing time for the first 3 months of the season. Even when they were crying out to see what he could do, when they were mired in slumps, they were playing spuds like Jason Smith and Andrew Nicholson minutes, and Gordon couldn't get 18 or so. And then we saw the trade of Toby Harris, and everyone was like, hey, this is Aaron Gordon. He's going to play 36 minutes a night. And I just, just hold on. That's not going to happen because this is Skiles. And it didn't happen. And he would only play him 28, 29 minutes a night, and very rarely did Aaron Gordon ever get fully unleashed as a full-blown starter. He only averaged 24 minutes a game, 9.2 points, half a three, 6.5 rebounds, 0.8 steals, 0.7 blocks, 47 and 67% shooting 30% from three. They are not appealing numbers by any stretch, but there is a lot to like here with Aaron Gordon. And I said earlier that the Magic might run a little bit slower than last season. I think that some of that is, when I talked about how the paces were always slow, I don't think it's necessarily Vogel's idea that I have to run everything slow. I think a lot of that was based on who the personnel was that he had. And when you've got David West and Roy Hibbert as your big men, it's really hard to push the tempo. And if you try and do, and you try and push the tempo with the wrong sort of team, as we saw with Randy Whitman and the Wizards this season, things can start to go wrong. But with a team that boasts athletes like Oladipo and Payton and Hezonja and Fournier and Gordon as, 5 year best six players, you can afford to push the pace a little bit, and that's going to really help Gordon. There's been some encouraging quotes come out about the potential for Aaron Gordon next year, and he is going to be a player who's going to be superb to watch. Now, he finished post All-Star as 81st in 9-cat leagues and 94th in 8-cat leagues. There is no chance that you're drafting him outside the top 100 next year. He has legitimately got top 60, top 50 upside for next season. He's a guy that could average a triple-one. He could get you 15 points, well, maybe 15 is too high, probably 12 points, 7 rebounds, 1.5 blocks, 1.2 steals, 1-3. And if he starts improving his field goal percentage, which he did this year, took it up to 47%, gets his free throws up to 72-75, which at 67% might not seem like much, but given where he came in from when he was like a 40% shooter at Arizona, to be up to 67% is a huge improvement. Into his third year, he's super young. The sky is the limit for Aaron Gordon. He should be a top 75 guy next year, and probably top 50 guy would be my guess at this point. He is primed for an absolutely monster campaign. All his advanced numbers look pretty good. He led the team in box score plus minus. He was second on the team in defensive box score plus minus. He was second on the team in win shares. Second on the team in win shares per 48. He was able to do so much on this team. His defensive numbers are tremendous. He started flashing offensive game. I can't wait to see what Aaron Gordon is able to do under a coach that actually understands basketball and actually understands being able to value players and play to their ability and understands the mental side of continuity and confidence. And I think that Vogel will definitely be able to do that with this group. Ersan Ilyasova was a guy that I was a little bit interested in Detroit. I thought he had a good role, and he did have a good role heading onto that team as their stretch four under Stan Van Gundy, which made him look super appealing. But as is pretty much usual with Ilyasova, he battled some injuries. He wasn't able to play. Well, it wasn't actually injuries. He was more battling fatigue. He wasn't able to play big minutes. Van Gundy wouldn't give him the sort of run that was necessary for him to be a top 100 player, and it showed in what he did for the year. He finished 158th over the course of the year, but 126th pre-All-Star, and then dropped off completely to 209th post-All-Star, which is when he joined Orlando. Again, he was part of that trade that saw the Pistons net Tobias Harris. And it just didn't make any sense at all for the Magic to acquire him. And again, part of the reason why the Magic fans should be glad that Skiles is gone. Ilyasova averaged 25 minutes for the season, 10.5 points, 1.3 threes, 5.5 rebounds, half a block, 0.7 steals, 42 and 71. 72%, sorry. But what does the future hold for him at this point? Again, I don't think that he's going to have that $8.4 million deal guaranteed. He's 29 years old. Where do the Magic move forward from him? I would be really strongly doubtful that they bring him back for next season. Wherever he goes, he's going to fit into a 20-22-minute role, which is great for 18-team leagues, 16-team leagues, who need someone who can hit a three as a big man, who can score, who can rebound. But when he's a negative in both percentage categories, it doesn't help him. He's not a prolific rebounder, although he can be at times, and it depends on who he plays with. He was never going to be that guy in Detroit next to Andre Drummond, but he can be a guy who does get big rebounding games. It's all going to depend on where he sits, but to me, his arrow is definitely not pointing up. I'm not expecting a big bounce back from Ilyasova next season, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him do better than what he did during his time in Orlando. Jason Smith was, as I said, an unrestricted free agent. He had a consistent season. He was ranked 219th in 9-cat, 246th in 8-cat leagues. Yeah, nothing really too exciting to write home about. 16 minutes a game, 7 points, 3 rebounds, a block a game, 0.8 assist, half a steal, 48 and 81. So he's one of those group of big men who hit his free throws at a higher clip, and that provides him value. It enables him to stay on the court as well because he's not a liability in that area. He's a pretty good shot blocker. He does have games where he can go through bursts of scoring, but at this point, he's never going to be a key big man for a team. He's 30 years old. He's going to be a backup somewhere, and a really reliable backup somewhere, but not someone who's going to really threaten fantasy leagues anywhere. But in opportunities that he gets, when he gets to play 25 minutes a night, 28 minutes a night, you like what he can produce, and he's going to be a key guy for maybe the next two seasons in really deep leagues, 20-team leagues, maybe 30-team leagues. He'll provide enough value there, but wouldn't be shocking to see him sign a two-year deal and that be the last contract he signed in the NBA. In terms of his advanced numbers, they weren't ideal. They were pretty poor. In fact, he finished 11th on the team in box score plus minus. His win shares, he finished 8th on the team. Not great numbers. Not terrible, but not fantastic. Brandon Jennings was an absolute disaster, as he was expected to be, because he was coming back from Achilles injuries, and you don't come back from Achilles injuries unless you're a freak like Wes Matthews, who even came back and was terrible himself. You don't come back and be yourself, and that's not what Brandon Jennings was. He finished the season 293rd in 9-cat leagues, 260th in 8-cat leagues, and everyone was super keen. People drafted him in standard leagues at the start of the season. Oh, when he comes back, he's going to be the starter. That was never going to be the case in Detroit. He was never going to get the job over Reggie Jackson. He showed a couple of flashes, but each flash where he'd go out and score 20 points and go 6 of 7 from the field, and Van Gundy would run him in that third quarter and go, oh, we'll just play him because he's hot. Then he'd go out and score 3 points combined in his next four games. And that is the concern when you're coming back from an Achilles injury. Could he be done for the rest of his career? Absolutely, because guys at his age that rely upon his sort of explosiveness, how do you come back from that sort of massive injury, which is what an Achilles is? It's a huge, huge problem. It's a huge, huge injury, and it's not a tough thing. It's not an easy thing to come back from. Now, he's going to be looking for a different role next season, Brandon Jennings. He'll be looking to jump at a different team. He averaged still 7 points, 1.1 threes, 3.6 assists, 0.6 steals, 37 and 73 is his percentage. You'd expect that free throw percentage to go back up. He's never going to be a good field goal shooter. But what he does give you is assists, he gives you steals, he gives you 3-pointers and decent scoring if he's himself. I can't see any team falling over themselves to go, we need to give Brandon Jennings the starting role here somewhere, because there's just too many other point guards who I'd rather have who aren't coming off Achilles surgeries, who aren't, not that he's old, but he's 26 years old. Maybe he's a better player next season, but I don't think he's someone that I would like as my starting point guard. Sacramento might look that way, but I would rather Darren Collison. New York, I would rather Jerian Grant get the role. Brooklyn, there's an interesting one. If he was in Brooklyn, then to me he's definitely a draftable player, because he would have had 18 months to recover from his Achilles surgery and start to rehab, and then he would almost be guaranteed a 30-minute, 32-minute role, and that would be really good for him, I think. But outside of that, I don't see too many teams where Brandon Jennings is going to fit brilliantly and is going to be a dynasty asset or anything along those lines. It's very much dependent on what happens with him in free agency as to what we do with him next year. But to me, I don't think he really ever approaches the heights that he had in Detroit before that Achilles surgery. Dwayne Dedmon. really underrated player. I think he's got potential. He's shown it when he gets opportunities, but he seems like a guy who's never going to be able to play starters minutes just because of the way that he plays. He's the way that he fouls, the way that he is a bit of a negative on offense. But still, in 12 minutes, he averaged 4.5 points, 4 rebounds, 0.8 blocks, half a steal, and was 56 and 75%. They're really good numbers. It doesn't look great in a rankings point of view, 237 and 274 for 9 and 8 cats. But in the second half of the season, he jumped himself up into 172nd in 9 cat leagues, and that's a big improvement. And if you look at the Magic in terms of their win shares, he finished 6th on the team in win shares. He led the team in win shares per 48. He had the best defensive box score plus minus on the team, and he's actually a pretty decent guy to pair with Vucevic as that backup guy to play in that sort of Bismack Biyombo defensive big man sort of role, where he can play 18 minutes, play 20 minutes, fill in and play 25 if Vucevic is out, you know, be good on lobs, grab a lot of rebounds, grab a lot of offensive boards as well, and be a real terror in terms of shot blocking. I think that's exactly what he brings, and he is a guy that I wouldn't mind bringing in as a backup center and, you know, having value in those deeper, really deep sort of leagues. Where he fits exactly in the league is unknown, but I wouldn't be against him being brought back to Orlando on a decent deal, maybe a two-year $8 million deal, two-year $10 million deal is not out of control to me for Dewayne Dedmon, and seeing what he can provide, because he does provide a lot defensively and he can be an interesting stream option as a shot blocker in fantasy leagues. Hezonja, a really disappointing rookie season. He finished outside the top 300 in 9 cat leagues, but saw himself jump 100 spots in the rankings post All-Star break, and that's a good sign. And that happens to a lot of rookies. Rookie all, everyone. That happens to a lot of rookies. He played 79 games, 18 minutes a game, 6 points, 0.8 threes, 2 rebounds, 1.5 assists, half a steal, 43 and 91, shooting 35% from 3. And being able to shoot 91% from the line as a rookie, shooting 35% from 3 as a rookie, and 43% from the field, I think is pretty solid for a wing player. Now, he's obviously got a lot to work on, but there is no chance he plays only 18 minutes next season. And if they decide to let Fournier walk, or they sign Fournier and trade him later in the offseason to give Hezonja minutes, I wouldn't be surprised. To me, Hezonja is looking to peak in the 2017-18 season, and that would be the time where I think they would look to make the move and put Hezonja into the starting lineup and run Fournier as a sixth man. But either guy can run as a sixth man, because as I said, they can both run as a default backup point guard. They can handle the ball. They can be a lead scoring threat on that second unit. But once Hezonja gets more comfortable, I think he fits better with the starters, and Fournier in that role would be tremendous as well. And I think that's the best way that they should be approaching it. So for dynasty leagues, I wouldn't be expecting a huge jump from Hezonja. I would be expecting him to jump from 300 to definitely close to top 175, maybe top 150, and he deserves to be probably drafted at the back end of standard leagues according to what we know at the moment. But unlikely that he remains in that top 120 position by the time the season's done. His advanced numbers weren't spectacular, but they weren't horrible either. He had negatives in both offensive and box score plus defensive box score plus minus. He had a 0.9 win shares. He actually held up pretty well defensively, considering he is a rookie coming over from Europe. Did quite well there, and has got a lot of room to grow in his offensive game. I thought he showed enough late in the season when given the opportunity to really, you know, he's got a potential to start next season. That is a huge huge chance for him, depending on what they do with Fournier. But as I said, playing Fournier as a 30-minute sixth man is not a crazy sort of thing to hope for. And I think you should be looking at Hezonja along those sort of lines. Andrew Nicholson. I don't understand Andrew Nicholson. He was 278th last season, 205th post-All-Star break, but he was just getting minutes when he didn't need to be getting minutes. He played 15 minutes a game, averaged 7 points, 3.5 rebounds, 0.7 threes. Defensively, he's non-existent, but he's really good in terms of being a solid percentage guy, 47 and 79%. But the inconsistency with Nicholson was frustrating. He'd play and they'd start him, and he'd play 25 minutes, and then he'd be in DMP CD for 10 games. And that never made any sense to me. You either love him or you hate him, or just make up your mind on what you want to do with him, Scholes. And he never seemed to be able to do that. Now, with his restricted free agency coming up, you try and retain him, you try and sign him, you know, give him the qualifying offer, match if it's not a crazy offer, but I don't think that he's going to be an awesome player moving forward. But with Ilyasova likely gone, Jason Smith potentially gone, I could see Nicholson moving in and being that first big off the bench behind Aaron Gordon and having that value around the 250 mark for big chunks of the season. His advanced numbers weren't spectacular, but he did finish ahead of guys like Hezonja and Ilyasova and Brandon Jennings in win shares. His box score plus minus was poor, though, -3.7. Only players worse than him were Shabazz Napier and Devon Marble. So he had a lot to work on there. Not someone that I'm massively keen on. He did start to add threes, and he has got this ability to really just turn it on and become red hot at times. It just doesn't last long, and he's very inconsistent in what he's able to do. CJ Watson, a very weird season again from him, just missing with his calf injury. For it just felt like months and months without any sort of indication of what was actually up. Only ended up playing 33 games, 20 minutes a game, 4.3 points, 2 rebounds, 2.7 assists and 0.6 steals. I think he gets marginalized this season and doesn't play 20 minutes. I think that like Vogel did with Lance Stevenson in Indiana, he will run Fournier and Hezonja more as second unit ball handlers. Maybe Watson gets out there as a spot-up shooter, because he's a decent three-point shooter, despite only shooting 29% from three this season. But at this point in his career, I think there's other ways for the league to go. He's 32 years old. He's got one more year left at $5 million. I don't really see him having a big role moving forward, and he probably declines, if anything. Shabazz Napier was a guy that at one point, again, was part of the Scott Skiles love fest. He had 11 minutes a game in 55 games. Didn't show me a huge amount. Did average 2 assists, but still shot 34% from the field, 33% from 3, and didn't really show me anything that makes me think he's going to be a decent player at any point. Ranked outside the top 400 for the season. Advanced stats, not really loving what he's able to do. Third or second worst on the team in his box score plus minus. He was the third worst player second worst player on the team in win shares. Just didn't show me anything at all. And with guys like Payton, Oladipo, Fournier, Watson's even there ahead of him, Hezonja as ball handlers, I'm not sure what Napier can do. Now, maybe he takes the jump and goes ahead of Watson in the rotation next season, but he needs to become a better shooter. He needs to become a better decision maker, and he doesn't have Skiles throwing random rotations out there to give him minutes this season. So there's a little bit of a concern there. Devon Marble, really good defensive player. Showed up really good defensively in terms of like box score plus minus. It was a -4.8 offensively, -0.6 defensive. So it's still negative, but it's a huge, huge difference between his offensive and defensive game. He's been in the league 2 years now, really struggled to get a foothold, played only 9 minutes in 28 games, did average half a steal in those 9 minutes, so that's a really good return there, but shot less than 30% from the field, shot 42% from the free throw line. I'm not sure there's much to really become excited about Devon Marble, and with an unguaranteed contract, there's a chance they just cut him, and we've seen the last of Devon Marble, so I wouldn't be becoming too overly attached to him in your fantasy leagues at this point. That's all the players on this team at the moment. I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to be back to look at a couple of international prospects and then answer your questions about the Orlando Magic.
This is the part with just the guitar, while we wait on the bass and drums. I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now, me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus that you know, you can't see what I see.
Talk about a couple of players that the Magic have the draft rights to but haven't joined the team yet, and to be honest, there's not a lot to be excited about with these guys, so I don't think I'm going to be unveiling a big surprise. Tyler Harvey's a guy they drafted in the second year last year. He went straight to the D League, played for the Erie Bayhawks, and did not do anything to really show himself out. He played 27 minutes a game, had 12 points a game there, 1.5 assists, 2.5 rebounds, a steal a game, but shot just 37% from the field, 35% from three, and really struggled. He had negative box score plus minus of 3.7. He had win shares of just 0.2. He had a horrible offensive rating of 98. He had a PER of just 10.4 in the D League, and that does not bode well for a player who's looking to find themselves on an NBA roster. He might come across, he might be able to take Devon Marble's spot next year, but not anything too exciting for him in the D League, where he should have been able to really start to score and be able to put up some decent numbers. It just didn't happen at all for him. The other guy they own the draft rights to is Giannis Timmer, a Finnish player who really doesn't look like he's going to be the part. He might come over. He probably won't. He played for Zenit St. Petersburg last season and overall didn't do a huge amount. He's a guy that can score at a decent rate. He had a great 64% true shooting across all competitions, a decent 19 PER on 21% usage, but nothing overly interesting about what he brings to the game. He ended up playing 28 minutes a game. He scored 14 points. He averaged 5 rebounds, 2.8 assists, 1.4 steals. So they're okay numbers. He hit 2.2 threes a game at 38%, which is obviously pretty good conversion, and shot 51% from the field. But he should be doing that. But in the times that we've seen him over in Summer League, he didn't play last season, the last two seasons. He looked overmatched. He's a guy, he's a wing player. He's 6'7". He plays probably as a small forward, but with Hezonja and Fournier there ahead of him, I'm not sure what Tim is going to be able to offer an NBA team. Maybe we see him at Summer League again, but I doubt it, and I wouldn't be overly excited if he was. He's not someone I'd be targeting in any sort of dynasty leagues, hoping that he can come through. Now let's get to the questions that you guys sent through, because there were a lot. Mike McDonald asks, is the change in coaching equals a change in pace or rotation? And what about the Lord Alfred outlook? Well, I talked about Lord Alfred Payton already. Change in pace, potentially, because paces were always slow. The Magic were pretty quick last year. But I think that they won't play anywhere near as slow as what the Pacers did, just because of the personnel that's there. And I think Vogel will be able to adapt to that. Rotation-wise, I think we'll see less uncertainty. We'll see more minutes for Vucevic, Oladipo, Payton, Gordon, and Hezonja. All those guys should get a bump in their playing time as well. Brent, who's the boy from Oz, he's got a couple of questions here. He says, Skiles set Alfred and Mario back. Can they recover next season? Absolutely. I've got no doubt that they'll be better players. Skiles only had 8 months to put his stink on the team, and I don't imagine that's going to have long bearing effects on these guys. I think that they'll be fine moving forward. And he also asks, he's got a couple of questions. Horford has to be the number one target, but who else was fit free agency veteran role we need? Chandler Parsons is the guy I think they should be looking at as well. I think he'd be an awesome guy to look at on the wing and would really elevate this team and add some three-point shooting, some good defense, as another ball handler. I think they'd love to have Chandler Parsons here. Is there a potential superstar leader hidden in this group we need to elevate? Oladipo's the superstar to me. Gordon can become the guy, but I think Oladipo can become the absolute superstar leader, guy that elevates other players. I'm really high on what Victor can do. Okay, Cameron Sager says, what positions most concern you that the team might address in free agency at the expense of good young players? I'm not overly sure that they really look to do much. I think that they want to bring in a backup point guard because Watson's not it. Jennings will be gone. They'll look to bring in a backup point guard, but it won't be at the expense of Alfred Payton. They'll probably look to solidify the center position, whether they bring Dwayne Dedman back or not, or they bring another center in next to Vucevic, and they want to get another backup power forward because Andrew Nicholson's not it, Jason Smith's not it. They need another backup big. So they need backups basically across the court. I think the wing position is pretty set with either Fournier or Hezonja there. But the other positions, they all need backups. And if you can bring in a starter quality player, the only guy that I wouldn't be looking to replace as a starter is probably Gordon and Oladipo. If you get a top-notch starter to go ahead of a guy like Hezonja or Fournier or even Payton, I would be okay with it. But I don't think they'd really go that route. Fred Mutto says, do you think Nikola Vucevic will break out next season? Where do you rank him for 8-cat roto? He's really good in roto leagues. He can be a guy that is, I think he's a top 30 guy for 8-cat roto, but break out, how much better do you expect him to get really when he's already a top 30 sort of player? I don't imagine him ever becoming a top 20 or top 15 player. I think he sort of is what he is at this point, and there's probably more chance of him regressing marginally than actually getting heaps better. That would be how I view him at the moment. John Gross Didier says, was the Payton decline a product of Skiles or skills? I like the way that question's framed. I think that it's more Skiles than skills, but Payton has a lot of flaws in his game, but he can work on them, and he did show an improvement in his field goal percentage and his ability to hit threes, and that's something that if he can keep working on those, he'll obviously get better. We had Tim Davison, who had a bunch of questions come in on Facebook. He says, is it worth doing a sign and trade with Fournier, seeing as, in my opinion, Mario will be the same type of player but way more athletic? Yeah, but I guess it depends on what you're getting back. I wouldn't have any issue with having both of those guys there for an extra season or two, letting Mario really grow into the role. Then by 2017-18, maybe trading Fournier away then or moving him into to a backup role. I absolutely think that that he can become expendable, but when you've got him on what should be not a terribly crazy contract, but still a decent amount, and Hezonja is still there on a rookie deal, you can afford to have both guys, and I think having that depth is probably more important. Tim also says, do you think Oladipo will have the breakout season he's meant to have this year? Absolutely, Tim. I'm big on him. And is Aaron Gordon the only untouchable player on the roster? I don't think even Aaron Gordon's untouchable. It depends on who you're getting back. Like, I would say Oladipo is, but if you're trading Oladipo to get Jimmy Butler, I can get behind that. To me, they're the best two players on this team, Gordon and Oladipo, clearly to me. Nathan Ritchie. What were Oladipo's struggles due to, and should we expect to see from him next season? Well, I've covered that a lot. His struggles were due to just being demoted and being skiosed, basically, and being put into a role which was not conducive to him or not conducive to the team, and that was rectified, and he was tremendous after that. Which players will actually regress with Vogel at the helm? Comes from Joseph Diffenbach. My biggest candidate for that is Vucevic. Not saying that he absolutely will, but he's my biggest candidate to do that. Daniel Evkovic. More or less wondering which Vucevic will show up in the new coaching regime. Is he still keeper worthy? And I said back to Daniel, it depends on your keeper rules. Yeah, he's keeper worthy if you're keeping five guys, and it depends on who else you're keeping. But I think Daniel's situation was he's keeping two players. I wouldn't be rushing to lock Nick Vucevic with my second keeper pick in that sort of situation. Brent Pearson asked the question we all want to know: how long will it take to wash the Scott Skiles stink off this team? I reckon they'll be pretty all right heading into the opener next season. I think the Vogel will get them whipped into shape in preseason. I think they'll all be relatively raring to go. And I don't think that Skiles will have any long-lasting effect on this team. Tomasai Tulia says, what position should they look to draft? I just think they just grab whatever best available players there. You know, rim-protecting big would be handy. A backup point guard would be handy at that point. Someone who can shoot is also a great value for this team, given they do lack some shooters, aside from, say, Fournier and Hezonja, that they need some shooters. So that's what they should be looking at with that pick 11. What's my ideal starting lineup? It's just Peyton Oladipo, Fournier, Gordon, Vucevic at that point. I could make an argument for Hezonja, but probably that's happening next season. All right, as I said, lots of questions came through for Orlando today. The next podcast we're going to be doing is the Utah Jazz. We're also going to be doing some draft talk heading into next week as well. Towards the end of next week, I'll have a draft podcast with a very special guest, which I'm keeping under my hat at this point, but we'll talk about that later on. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Of course, check out basketballmonster.com for all your stuff heading into next season, hardwoodparoxysm.com, and all the great stuff that's happening over there, articles, podcasts, finals, previews. Got a great Game 7 to look forward to with the Warriors and the Thunder now, which I think the Warriors, after that massive comeback, should be favorite heading into Game 7, and that's a real shame for the Thunder, but it is what it is at this point. I don't really care who wins, just good to see good basketball and good to see these teams playing as exciting as they are. I hate the negative narratives that get out there, Oklahoma City choking, all this sort of stuff. I just hate it. I just don't want any part of it. Really good to see that game. Some unfortunate things, but I'd rather look at it and go, Klay Thompson was absolutely on fire. Steph turned it up when he needed to. And yes, the Thunder made some bad turnovers, but to me, it's not a referendum on how bad their players are or their mental strength or anything along those lines. We are done today, guys. Best wishes to all of Bryce DeJean Jones's family and his extended NBA family. We are done, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.